Hey everyone, welcome back to this 49th episode of Guildcast. Yes, that's right. It's been 2 months, but here we are recording another episode.
Yay!
I'm your host, Sean, and I'm here with Ruby. How you doing, Ruby?
Hey, pretty good. Are we, like, glad that convention season's almost over?
Yeah, it's never over, but the craziness of that, you know...
The big rush.
Yeah, that August rush and the end of August. Yeah, I mean, Gamescom and PAX together, you know, basically back-to-back weeks, that's insane. And I know, you know, you went to PAX, none of us went to both of them, none of us went to Gamescom, but yeah. I can't imagine the developers who have to go to all these conventions, like, back-to-back like this. It's crazy.
Yeah, ArenaNet, they actually closed their offices the Monday after PAX so everybody could get some sleep.
I believe it. That's kind of their hometown convention anyway, so it's a big deal, you know.
Yeah.
And so for anybody who doesn't know, PAX is Penny Arcade Expo, I can't even say it. This is PAX Prime, the one in Seattle, the one that started it all. Of course, there's PAX East in Boston as well that usually happens in March. And they're actually talking about a third one, too. They haven't said where, but they're talking about making a third PAX somewhere. Come on, Chattanooga, Tennessee. Come on. No, probably not.
PAXanooga?
Yeah, so it's a big deal, and it's especially a big deal to ArenaNet. And so what we're going to do is we're going to spend this show talking about you know, Ruby's experiences with Guild Wars 2 and all the different things she got to play and see and touch and hear and all that good stuff. So it's going to be a big show. It's going to be exciting, and especially because, like I said, it's been 2 months, you know. I won't sit here and try to give excuses why it's been 2 months, but here
and
we are.
We're busy. I mean, yeah. That's it. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. But what's crazy is we have episode number 50 coming next week, or not next week, but next time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy to think about, you know, I have to try to plan something out. I actually have a plan. I haven't told you yet.
No, you haven't. I'm interested.
It's going to involve, well, I can't tell you. No, it's going to be hopefully awesome, and I hope that we can do it. So I don't know when that'll be, but you know, let's focus on episode 49 right now. Mm-hmm. All right, so PAX Prime in Seattle last weekend. Actually, a week from right now, you were heading out there, right?
Yes, I was frantically packing and trying to wrap up work and all that stuff.
Yeah. So well, let's kind of like start, I guess, chronologically, and we'll start with you got there Thursday, but everything started on Friday, right?
Yeah, everything started on Friday. Technically, I didn't get there until Friday.
Oh, okay.
I landed at like 1:30 in the morning. I was so stinking tired. and I'm actually going to stop and give a quick shout out to the Gaming World Entertainment Network, the Gwen people. You know them?
Yeah, yeah.
They picked me up at the airport at 1:30 in the morning, so I did not have to pay $50 for a cab to get to my hotel.
Nice.
They came and got me. They picked me up in a big white van with an inflatable sheep sticking out the passenger side window.
And you got in?
That is how stinking tired I was.
Did it say free candy on the side or anything?
Yeah, I was like, this looks legit. I'll get in. No, it seriously was a big white van. And Rhonda, Malibu Barbie, gave me a call and said, I mean, when I landed, I texted her that I had just landed, so she went ahead and called me and said, hey, okay, we checked your flight to save you some time, and you need to go to baggage claim 16. That's where your bag will come up. I was like, thank you for not making me look for that. And she goes, then come out like door number 21 in the Seattle airport, and we're out at the curb waiting for you. There's a big white van with an inflatable sheep sticking out the front window.
Can't miss it.
I could not even process that. I just, okay, all right. And, my hotel was not where they were staying. It was a completely different place. So they really went out of their way to drive me to downtown Seattle and to my hotel. So that was extremely, extremely, extremely nice of them.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. They were just very sweet. So that was nice. I really appreciated that. Cool. The Guild Wars, it's just cool stuff like that the Guild Wars 2 community does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
They'll pick you up from the airport, the Guild Wars 2
with
community.
An inflatable sheep, and I swear to God, the sheep, garter belt and stockings.
Nice.
I'm not even making that up. I couldn't.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, that was Sheila the Sheep and the Gwen crew. So they all came to get me. Friday morning, our first appointment, that was media day. We got in like an hour early. Mm-hmm. And Matt from Massively and I went in. We had an appointment with Star Wars The Old Republic right at 9 o'clock.
I'll beep that up.
We had an appointment with another game. But anyway, I got Matt settled. That was kind of his thing. And I was, you know, I was kind of helping him learn the ropes. So I got him settled. And once the play started and once his playtime started, he had his recorder going. And he was all set. I wasn't playing. So I was like, okay, you're going to be just sitting here playing a PvP match for the next 20 minutes and recording your thoughts. Do you need me? He was like, no. I said, I'll be back. So you know where I went.
Yep.
Made a beeline for the Guild Wars 2 booth. I just kind of wanted to say hi to everybody and snap a couple pictures before it got like really, really insane. And they actually asked, they were like, so let's get you on a machine and get you playing. And I kind of hovered for a second. I was like, I really should get back to Matt. I can't just, you know, abandon him. So I had to go back. Once he was set, we had a Wildstar demo. I mean, we just had so much stuff to do outside of Guild Wars 2 that it was hard. Mm-hmm. And every spare little minute, I was back hovering around that booth.
Yeah.
Actually, Sunday night, Jeff Grubb came over. He was like, so, don't you have a home? He didn't exactly say that, but it was something like, you know, so are there no other booths that you want to go to? No. Not even a little bit. Let's see. So I got some hands-on time at the press machine. We had a scheduled demo. And the first thing I did, I wanted to jump into character creation and, like, take my time. And Matt, Massively's Matt, and then Mike Z were kind of making fun of me. They were like, you're going to waste your entire demo on character creation. I said, that's not a waste.
Yeah, yeah.
That's absolutely.
Just wait till the game comes out. You're going to be spending weeks, right?
Yes! After seeing this, I spent 10 minutes in character creation. I spent a fourth of my demo just in character creation. And character creation is still not all the way revealed. A lot of it was limited. I think I came across three options. Three, maybe more, that said something about this will be released, not available in the demo, will be released in the full game. I was making a Silvari, and I really favor the fall and winter Silvari. I think I've said that before. I don't like the bright greens and the hot pinks, and I understand. I mean, it fits for the season.
Yeah, those are the ones, too, with the branches coming off their head, right?
Well, they all, you have a branch option for everybody.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I love that.
Yeah, me too.
And I mean, I like some of the other options I've seen, like the leaf hair and the petals. And that kind of thing, just the branch, they look more alien and plant-like to me.
Yeah.
Like that. But I do like the leaves. But I was kind of looking around. I just wanted to see, you know, what was available. And I have to say, I would like to see more, like, hair and ear options. The things that don't have sliders, where you just pick from the preset options. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more once the game is launched, because I think there were like 8 or 10, maybe 12, which is great, but it's a lot like the current iteration of Guild Wars 2. You pick from 8, 10, or 12 faces.
Mm-hmm. So you're picking from the faces, but you said there aren't sliders for each?
There were not sliders for faces, ears, or hair.
Okay.
They were preset. It's like the current iteration of Guild Wars.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I mean, the options were all great. I had a tough time picking a lot of them because they looked so good. I mean, I like turned her to the side for the ears, and Matt and I sat there for a good full minute or two clicking back and forth on all these amazing ear options. And I mean, that says good things to me.
Wait, so, okay, I have to ask, do they have Elfie ears?
I didn't notice anything particular. Like, you mean like long, pointy elf ears?
Yeah, because you would think the Silvari would kind of most favor an elf-type character, even though there are no elves, you know?
I don't remember seeing that in particular.
Okay, good. I just wanted to say good.
And I don't think they would put a blatant elf ear in there as much time as they've spent saying they're not elves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What I did pick, and this, I just thought this was so cool for Silvari. What I ended up picking, and Matt and I were clicking back and forth, and we were finally like, man, there is nothing as good as this. They didn't, I mean, they were kind of vaguely ear-shaped, but they were folded leaves.
Oh, cool.
They were leaves, like, rolled and folded to make, you know, like a little ear, like to funnel the noise in, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
But they were very obviously nothing but leaves. And that was such a cool option to me. I thought that, I mean, it just had such a neat look. Mm-hmm. And there were some real, like, humanoid-looking ears that looked like they were made of flesh. Hmm. But they didn't excite me as much as the ear thing did. There were some, I remember now, that actually looked like knot holes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It was, like, almost like a little knot hole with little branch sprouts here and there.
That's cool that they, instead of making everything leaves, they, you know, use the different parts of the tree, wood, knot holes, leaves, everything, branches.
Yeah, and you could really do a lot. I mean, I don't want to say the options were too limited. I would just like to see more. But you could do a lot to make it look a lot more like, almost like a trunk and branches rather than leaves and petals.
Cool.
So I like that because I actually preferred the look. I went with the branch hair because that really is my favorite. It's not pretty, and I usually favor pretty characters. Mm-hmm. But this was just such an unusual look that I really wanted to go with it and play with it. Mm-hmm. Character creation, I'm just very impressed. And you know what I would almost like to see are more face, hair, these options that are clickable rather than sliders. I would absolutely pay for extra options in their NCSoft store. Hmm. I mean, I would pay for more cosmetic facial options.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I think that would be a neat addition. But at any rate, I would like to see more. So, and I don't want face sliders to make a mutant. I would like more clickable options over time, because one of the things that appeals to me so much is the extensive customization we can have in comparison to what we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why
I've always thought, you know, I always thought it would be cool to have something similar to Ion, because Ion has some pretty good, but it's all sliders. You know, the entire thing is sliders. You can make your person tiny or really tall, and you can make some pretty, you know, crazy stuff. Giant hands, giant feet, all that stuff. And I think that's what you're talking about. You don't want to see people running, like, tiny people with giant hands that are as big as them, you know.
Exactly.
Just, yeah. And I can see that. But at the same time, I like the customization, you know, the options there.
Well, now, they have said that they're basing the character creation in Guild Wars 2 on what we have currently in Ion.
Oh.
But they've said they've based it on that, but they've put they've put restrictions in place to make sure everything conforms to the Guild Wars 2 look.
Mm, okay.
Because they basically don't want you making freaks running around Tyria.
Yeah.
They want everything to conform to the art style, which makes sense to me because they've worked so hard on it and put so much into it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, they have based it, though, on what we have an eye on now.
That's cool. It's good to hear.
Yeah, so that's kind of neat, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was Silvari customer creation. I don't know what customer creation is, but character creation is what I was playing with. We kind of ran around. The Silvari have not, the playable Silvari overall have not just put me into giant fangirl squealing. They're pretty cool, and I love the look of them. Well, I love the look of most of them. I like the look of the fall and winter. But nothing really thrilled me or stood out to me. I mean, they're great. And I had a good time with it. It just wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing ever.
So in your mind, when you have your preference of which kind of characters you're going to make first, Silvari isn't in the top two or three?
Silvari, I think, is three.
Okay.
Silvari's three. I've got a pretty clear idea of what I want to do here.
You have a spreadsheet all made up and everything?
Oh, man. I didn't think of that. Hang on. I'll be right back. Asura. Oh, my gosh. Asura is just shot to the top of my list. As soon as I made one and started playing it, that's... And I'm not even sure it was on my radar too much before. I mean, I was going to play a human. A human was my first choice because they are so beautiful. And then I made and played an Asura and went nuts. Character creation was a blast. And I have like a little story here. I had to go over to the Logitech booth at one point because the lines there were shorter.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my scheduled demo, but I wanted to go. I mean, there was so much to see. I mean, playable Asura, playable Silvari, crafting, the char starting area. There were new zones to explore. And all of this, I mean, you could really only pick one of these things per demo. Which means, I mean, because I made an Asura, and I couldn't go back to character creation. I mean, I was kind of locked in once the demo started. So I could check out one thing at a time. So I kept trying. And that's actually why I was at the booth so much. I'd go over there and try to get in a line and see if I had enough time to get in between appointments for other stuff. Or if I didn't, I would look over someone's shoulder and sit there and watch. Because I was trying so hard to see everything. So at one point I went over to the Logitech booth because the lines were shorter over there and I only had to wait like an hour. And I got in there and wanted to make an Asura. And that time I spent more than 10 minutes in character creation. And I had been chatting with Joey Knight, Joe Hostel, one of the developers, in line. And then once it was my turn, I went over there. I put the headphones on. I was like, everybody leave me alone. I got stuff to look at here. And I was sitting there making my Asura. And I saw Joe out of the corner of my eye. He just came over. I don't know if it was like to see what I was doing or to say something. But he came around the corner, looked at me, and just started laughing. And I was like, what? He goes, you are just completely lit up.
That obvious. Like,
you look so happy. And it was, I was making my Asura and just going out of my mind at how varied the character creation options were. Because you can, if you look at the Asura, I mean, if you really think about what they look like and what they do, they're scary little guys. I mean, you've got like the little shark teeth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think when it came around the corner, I was playing with all the faces and clicking through all the faces. You can make absolutely the cutest little Asura you ever did see in your life, or you can make this scary little shark dude. And everything in between. The range of options, even within the limited clickable faces, was so wide that it absolutely thrilled me.
Now, does the character creation involve like voices, where you can pick your voice of your character?
No, unless it's something that hasn't been released yet.
Okay, I know a lot of them do that. I was just curious about the Asura. If you could pick like their attitude, that would be awesome.
Crud! Now I'm sitting here going, oh man, I hope it wasn't there and I forgot, but.
Yeah,
I spent so much time on their look. even the ears. I mean, you could make like these big ears that kind of dangled down because they were so long. Or you could make the smaller, you know, the Asura ears like we're used to now. There was like a height slider. And a lot was just very limited. So I picked this cute little female Asura thief. And started playing her. And then I was even more thrilled. And I know I told you about this at PAX. Their character movement animations are absolutely incredible. It didn't even occur to me that they would, I guess they could, but it didn't occur to me that they would put so much into the little minor things. And the first thing I noticed was that I don't know, it still just thrills me to jump. And I know jumping in Guild Wars 2 is almost a cliche at this point. But I'm idling, like when I'm looking around, I'm like tapping the space bar just to make him jump. So I tap the space bar to make her jump. And you know, I mean, Asura have these little tiny legs. They're stumpy. And then big heads. And I tap the space bar to make her jump. And she goes, huh! To jump. I mean, it was like this little grunt of effort. And it was the cutest little sound you ever did hear. And then I took off running. I was running toward an NPC. And, you know, I was like pressing W to run. And I let up on the W key when I got where I was going. And she sort of stumbled to a halt and then wobbled back and forth to keep from falling.
Keep her big head from falling over.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it communicated, was that she's so top-heavy that when she stops, it's kind of like, oh, whoa!
That's funny.
And putting that extent into character movement. Because think about it, most games, and I know a couple games do this, I think you said like Vindictus?
Yeah, it does that.
Yeah, but most games, you stop running and just, bam, the movement stops.
Yeah.
It's not awkward or anything, it's not like, I don't know, it doesn't look wrong, but it's nothing special.
Yeah.
What else? When she's running, I had her jump once while she was running, and she kind of waved her arms in the air as she was flying through the air to keep her balance. So aww. It's just, I know, it is so stinking cute, you could just die. And I laugh at this because I feel like it would really kind of piss the Asura off to be thought of as cute. they don't want to be cute. They don't want to be thought of as cute because I feel like they view their look and their diminutive stature as not necessarily a handicap, but something that is a non-issue given how smart and clearly superior they are to the other races. And I'm sitting here going, oh, he's so cute. And I think they'd be really upset about that.
There's my soundbite for the end of the show.
Oh, right there. Great. I'm going to have to, like, burp or something to give me something better to work with.
So you enjoyed the Asura. And would you say that's your top right now?
Absolutely, my top. It's Asura, Human, Silvari, Norn, Char.
Oh, poor Char.
It makes me sad.
And you did get to play a Char through customer creation, too. Through character creation as well?
Yes, and like 5 minutes in, and then an enforcer made me leave.
Oh.
Because I was like drunk and disorderly or something. PAX was over. It was Sunday night, and they were like, you have to stop. We have to start taking this booth down.
And you're like, don't you know who I am?
No. I did. And it just, I guess because I'm such a fan of, I mean, you and I have both been playing so long, and we know this history so well, and I've kind of taken it to heart. So I played a Char, and I had to go take out Duke Berrydan's ghost. Hmm. I had a hard time with that when I played the dungeon, when I played the Ascalon Catacombs dungeon back in June, because Relina and Vassar, I know we talked about that before, they are more powerful when they're together because they're lovers, and we had to rip them apart from each other to take them down, and that just broke my heart. So we had to go take out Duke Berrydan's ghost. And there was the Char around me. There was a lot of trash talking. Like, you know, you're surrounded by, there's nothing left here. There's nothing left here for you. We've destroyed your world, and we're going to destroy you for good. And, you know, we're never going to let you forget how we took you down. And all of this, and I'm participating in this going, but I don't want to. Can't we just leave him alone?
That's such an interesting and kind of unique situation. You know, I'm trying to think of other games that would do that, but you know, you already have this established lore and this established idea of how this stuff goes according to one side of the story. You know, and you've played through Pre-Searing and Guild Wars 1, and you've met these, you know, the NPCs, and you know, you've helped them. You've helped them with quests, you helped them, you know, and then here you are years later playing the other side of it and not only seeing the other side. I mean, we got to see that with that Gwen, I guess, expansion, I guess you could say, where we played as Gwen. But, you know, it's interesting to see, I find it interesting to see that other side of things. And to kind of evoke those emotions, you know, it's like human nature to be like, this isn't supposed to be the way it, you know, the way it happens, and this feels wrong. And it's just so interesting how they've kind of plucked at that, you know what I mean? Like, they've picked at that little part of your emotion for those people who have played through, you know, Pre-Searing. And that's really cool that they can do that.
It is, and it's something that I've been thinking about, I mean, just from a lore perspective, quite a bit, and I'm kind of realizing what a nerd I am right at this moment, too. That's like a little side point. But what's so interesting is that for a couple of years now, I've sympathized with the Char part of all of this. They were there first. That was their home, and we came barreling in and forcibly, I mean, we shoved them out forcibly, and we killed them. And I mean, I don't necessarily feel like they were in the wrong in all of this. But at the same time, this emotional thing, this just, it just killed me playing the Char. And after we took out Duke Barrington, and Jeff Grubb was actually like standing there with me, and he was like, and I'm just looking around, I'm like, this is awful. There's the Great Northern Wall, and you can actually run up onto the broken ruins of the Great Northern Wall.
Oh.
And I was just sitting here, I'm like, I hate this. This is making me so sad. And Jeff is behind me, he's going, but to the Char, this is a scene of great victory.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I don't care. This is awful. And I won't, I just don't know if I'll ever enjoy playing a Char. Because the lore that we've known until now is just so deeply ingrained in this game for me, mm-hmm. that it really kind of makes me sad.
Yeah.
So I don't, that, I mean, that was my entire takeaway from that.
Interesting. So,
yeah, I don't. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They've been so good about showing all these different points of view. Mm-hmm. I mean, after, like you said, after going through Gwen's story in that solo mission, I felt a lot more sympathy for her. I was like, well, of course she's completely broken and messed up.
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah.
So there was, I don't know, they've just done a very good job of evoking the emotion for everyone involved and making you see their point of view. But it still doesn't, it doesn't help. I come away sad and kind of down every time I play something from the Char point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was my entire takeaway from the Char. That's kind of a downer.
No, but it's understandable. And I think for the opposite reason, Char is probably up toward the top of my list. Because I want to see that other side. And I understand, you know, kind of the, you know, the I don't know, the apprehension with, mm-hmm. you know, fighting against the people who you essentially helped, you know, 5 years ago when you played this
yeah.
game through the first time. But I see it more as kind of like, I want to see the other side. I want to see how the other half lives, you know, one of those kind of
yeah.
things. So I'm, and plus everything about the Char I love. You know, the steampunky kind of, I don't know, kind of roughness to them.
Yeah,
you know, I
really absolutely. Yeah, so they're no frills soldiers.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm definitely, I would say Char might be number one on my list.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't really thought about the rest, though, in order, because it'll be every one of them anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know, I wish I felt that way, because the Char have been a big hit. I mean, everybody, they're so badass that everybody wants to just play them, and I've heard so many people say they can't wait to play a Char, and I wish I could get into that other side of the story without coming out of it depressed.
Yeah. Well, originally, you know, when we first started hearing about the other races, my first pick was going to be Savari, but I think, I don't know, it's just over the years, and it's not so much the reveal, it's just over time, I think that they've kind of grown out of my, you know, preference. But I mean, Asura, they're probably number two, and especially like everything you've told me about them.
Oh,
and
they're so cool.
Just the fact that they're small. I love playing small characters. I play a gnome in World of Warcraft.
And do you?
I play those little gibberlings and allies online. Like, I love the little small. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, these are, oh my gosh, these are so cool. They are great. Let's see. So that was character creation. What else? What next? I mean, there's so much.
PvP?
Well, that's a short story.
Okay.
And we can do that. I said when I went to Seattle that I would PvP in Guild Wars 2. Uh-huh. Feel like I should at least try to experience every aspect of the game. And it was pretty much just like I expected.
So you got killed a lot.
Oh my gosh, it was so bad. Matt and I went to the ArenaNet party. And there's, like, one small blessing is that I had a pretty small audience to my failure. we went into the usability lab where they have 5, 6? I don't know. They have, like, 20-ish demo stations set up. And we did a 5v5 match. And everybody was like, okay, who wants to do it? I said, okay, this will be my venture into Guild Wars 2 PvP. This will be my first one. Maybe I'll love it. So Matt and I sat next to each other. Matt was on my team. We lost 500 to 81. 500 to 81. Think about that. It was wretched. And I died and died and died and died and died. I finally accomplished something because I think it was Leah Rivera one of the developers was literally standing behind me, and she was like, and she said, hey, you can take out the trebuchet. There's nobody there. And I gave her this, like, a drooling idiot look. I was like, where's the trebuchet? How can you tell there's nobody there? What is happening? And she was literally like, okay, run forward. Okay, you see those steps? Yeah, turn left on the go up the steps, go around. Okay, now you see this thing in front of you? I'm like, yeah. She said, attack it. Okay.
And
it was the trebuchet. Yes, but I was less confident than that. So I took out the trebuchet, and that kept me from coming dead last on the leaderboard at the end. I was second to last.
But you want to explain why Matt was last?
Because he wasted so much time reviving me. Seriously, he'd be trying to run off and do something, and I would get killed. And God bless him, he would come back and bring me back from a defeated state. And like 30 seconds later, I'd die again, and he's like, "Oh my gosh!" Okay, I even threw him under the virtual bus because he wasted all of his time trying to revive me.
Nice.
What I could see of it, though, looked pretty cool. Very, very, very strategy-oriented. I mean, it's not just like a straight-up, here's a big circle, capture the flag in the center, get the guy. I mean, you know, kill the other guys. Get them, get the flag. There are levels up and down and all around, and there are, I mean, it's just, I don't want to say torturous, but there's a very, it's a complicated map, especially when you've never done it before. There are stairs and doorways to run up and down and in and out and use for cover, and, you know, like the trebuchets that you can use to attack things, you can take them out. So the enemy can't, there are repair kits so you can fix stuff. It's just, it's very complicated in a good way. And there has been some talk, and I honestly am just not knowledgeable enough to really address it in a big way, but there's been a lot of talk about ArenaNet getting into the esports arena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this seems to really lend itself to that.
Yeah. Well, they dabbled with that at Gamescom, too. So, and I mean, they started out, you know, PvP and Guild Wars started out with these $100,000 tournaments, and, you know, they did that stuff hardcore at the very beginning of the game, and then they kind of stopped doing that. It was such a PvP-heavy game when it first came out. So I guess it's good that they're getting back into that. You know.
Well, and what's funny is that I guess they still have that perception. I saw somebody last week, I think, on Gamebreaker, and, you know, just every once in a while you, like, look over at the chat room. And I glanced over in time to see somebody say, wait a minute, Ruby says she hates PvP, but she plays Guild Wars? Something's not right. I mean, I think the insinuation there, they said a couple other things, and the insinuation there was that I was lying about being a Guild Wars fan.
Oh, you're
and
such
I was
a
like,
liar.
I know, right? And not in a malicious way. It was just like, they were kind of like, something doesn't add up here.
Yeah.
So a lot of people still have that PvP-heavy perception of Guild Wars. So that was just an interesting little thing. But what I did see was cool. And when the match was over, I said, okay, my feelings about PvP and Guild Wars 2 are the same as Guild Wars 1. I'm going to go do a PvE demo. Y'all have fun. So it's just, I don't know, I guess it makes me not very well-rounded. But man, I just cannot stand PvP. And it's all me. It's not that their PvP is bad.
Yeah.
I don't like PvP anywhere.
Well, I think you hate PvP for the same reason I do, where it's like, oh, look, there's this thing over here that I want to go check out. And we don't get that tunnel vision that you need for PvP, where it's like, I see a warrior in front of me, I'm a mesmer, so I need to press 3 and then 4 and then 5, and then that will make this condition, and then I need to press 7, and then that, you know, it's like, when I play, I think I'm more involved in the situation instead of the formula to make something happen precisely to the numbers, you know what I mean? And that's why I'll jump in and someone will kill me in 3 seconds, and I'm like, oh yeah, they had that formula down. You know, if they saw me as a blank, and then they knew to press blank, blank, and blank.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I don't know. I can't get into that. And I can understand, though, how people can get into it because it's a science, you know? And if you're very kind of, like, scientific and you know exactly what formulas to use to do this, Yeah, that would appeal to you. I think, I speak for both of us to say that that's not really us. And it's not
Yeah.
anything bad about PvP, it's just that's not us.
Yeah, I want time, and well, that's it in a nutshell right there. I want time. I want to look around and see, like exactly like you said, I'm in this situation and I want to look around and see what's up. And now that you say that, I actually remember commenting to somebody on Sunday. We were just talking about PvP. I said, you know what I want? I want an empty PvP map with no people around it, so I just want an hour to explore.
Yeah. Well,
And
it's like the guild
PvP doesn't
maps.
work like that.
Yeah. But you could do that in the guild maps in Guild Wars 1.
Yeah, I'd like to
Yeah.
see something like that in Guild Wars 2. Just let me go look at the map and be left alone for a little while because they put as much work into the art style of those maps as they did anything else, and I love that. So anyway, I don't like it any better, but I gave it the old college try.
Cool.
I lost horrendously, and then I was done.
Okay, so we have the PvP, we have the character creation for the Asura and the Savari. What else did you see?
Oh, I took on to, well, I tried to take on to Quaddle the Sunless. I actually took on three high-level dynamic events. And I'll talk about the Ash Horizon first because that's the one that I really, really got into. The Ash Horizon is an Orion undead ship that has shown up off the coast of Tyria, and undead of all five races are coming up from the ocean from the Ash Horizon. And you're on the beach fighting, and there's a cannon, which in all the chaos I actually did not have time to figure out how to use. I got up on the cannon once, and then something started beating on me, and I had to get back off the cannon. but you can fire this cannon at the Ash Horizon off in the distance. But at the same time, you're trying to take on the passengers of the Ash Horizon that are coming up on the beach and attacking you. It was a cool situation because there were several other player characters there, and we were all kind of participating, and I really got a, that was my chance. Well, I mean, this time I got a feel for it when I was doing dungeons at Fanday, but this was really a chance to get a feel for how this whole non-Trinity thing works in a real battle situation with other players. And that was interesting because I was playing a thief. I was pistol, and can I just say how much fun Unload is?
Sure.
Oh my gosh. I cannot bang on the unload key enough. As soon as that cooldown was over, I was doing it again. It's just so much fun. And again, the Asura animations just kill me. They're so sweet. And I think it's just because the Asura are so wee. But I'm running around, and several times I'm just really learning to love the ground-targeted support skills. Several times I was taking quite a bit of damage, and I'd look around and I would see that somebody had thrown a healing circle down on the ground. And I could just run over there into that and get healed. And I know people have had concerns about ground-targeted skills in the past. And I'm trying to think of a really good way to explain this. But I don't feel like they are as clumsy as people have made them out to be in the past. Because if you've got situational awareness, if you can look and see, okay, if I go in this ginormous circle 5 feet away, I will get healed. Basic situational awareness makes this an excellent mechanic. And it saved my butt many, many times. I never made it into a downed state because of that. I got in trouble several times just because the mobs were everywhere. The battle was complete chaos. People are running in every direction. And it wasn't like all of us were on this side and all the enemies were on this side. I mean, like physically on the map. We were all mixed up and running everywhere. And those ground-targeted skills saved my butt every time. So it just, and they're physically very large. So it's not like a tiny little thing that you have to run over there and try to position yourself in. Heck, I could physically run through the thing from one side to the other on my way somewhere else and still get a really decent amount of healing.
So, not having that dedicated healer isn't that big of a deal.
Not at all. No, not at all. And it's actually, I feel like it's almost easier for anybody wanting to throw out a heal if you want to help your ally. I mean, you've done healing in Guild Wars 1.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to, I don't know, there's just, I'm not a very good healer, but you either have to physically click on the avatar or you have to click on their name in the party window and then go down there and click your heal. There are a lot more steps compared to this. And it just heals, it heals one person unless you're using like full group skills.
Well, there are shortcuts for, you know, keyboard
Oh
shortcuts and stuff, but yeah.
yeah, but this is even keyboard shortcuts. This is so much simpler because you just throw this giant circle down on the ground, and anybody that needs a heal, here you go, have at
Yeah.
it.
It's kind of funny, actually. It's like putting the burden of responsibility on the players instead of having the monk chase everyone around and try and being like, "Come back into range so I can heal you," and then they die and they're
Yes.
like, "Stupid monk," and you're like but yeah, if you put like the thing here, you're like, "Okay, there it is. It's
Yeah,
up to
have at it.
you to come here and get healed." Yeah.
Exactly. And that's, I think, is one of my favorite things about this lack of the Trinity. You are responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
You are more responsible for yourself. And it doesn't cause you to be less dependent on others or play with others less. There's more, you're responsible for yourself more, but at the same time, there's more group reliance on one another. Does that make sense? Okay. Let's see. Oh, and speaking of situational awareness and map awareness, I had to learn the hard way how incredibly important positioning is. Because there is a thief skill with my pistols that both does damage and gets you out of range. And it's a cool skill because if I'm in trouble and there's not a healing circle nearby, I can fire off this skill that I have completely forgotten the name of, and it will do some damage to the enemy, and the recoil will throw me back a good ways, and it'll get me out of range in time to press 6. So it's a cool skill. But I was on the beach, and the first time I used it, I didn't pay attention to positioning. Next thing I know, I'm in the ocean. And I'm underwater and have a new weapon and new skills. And I'm going, what just happened? Where am I? So the recoil, I literally shot myself into the ocean.
That's awesome. I want
Yeah.
to see that.
It was, well, I did it 3 or 4 times. Some of us take a longer time to learn. But it was funny, but it illustrated to me how incredibly important positional awareness is in Guild Wars 2.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's good to hear.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to make an idiot of yourself. So that was, and I mean, that was pretty funny, and it was a lesson learned, so that was good. So, very, very, and you know, I mean, combat was interesting now that energy has been eliminated. That wasn't an issue anymore, so I could just, as long as I wasn't in a cooldown, I was open to use, to do whatever. So I liked that.
So what else did you get to see? I know
Oh,
you went
yeah.
back several times, but
Yes. I went back as much as I could.
and you got to play the character creation in with every race?
I played character creation Silvare, Asura, and Char.
Okay, but you
And
did human before. No, you didn't do human before.
I did human before. I mean, I played a human before, but there was no
Yeah,
character creation
yeah,
at the
yeah.
time. So, let's see what else. Oh, the other dynamic event. This illustrated something cool that Colin had actually talked about. I got the new event nearby thing when I was playing on my Silvare. Saw Tequaddle the Sunless off in the distance, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna go do that. I've been wanting to fight him." And I talked about this before. I ran over there and found that there were no player characters around, and the enemy had killed all the NPCs. So I mean, they had the beach. That was it. And Tequaddle had thrown down, it's called a bone wall, and it's exactly what it sounds like, this giant wall of bones in front of him that blocks line of sight attacks. And the beach is covered in Orion undead. There are dead Hylek allies everywhere. And I'm thinking, okay, if I could take down Tequaddle solo, that would be pretty cool. Well, it turns out, and Colin talked about this later, I wish he'd talked about it before I got into this situation, that the big events, everything scales, dynamic event scales, but the big ones don't scale down to a solo difficulty. The big stuff you need groups for. He said, you know, this thing's like making the rabbits stop eating the watermelons in Farmer Whoever's garden. Those kind of things scale down to one. The big stuff like the Ash Horizon and Tequatl the Sunless and so on and so forth don't scale down that far.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I tried. Man, I get credit for trying. I snuck around to the side and thought, okay, I need to clear the beach. And, you know, I need to get all these undead off the beach. So I kind of stuck around to the side, and I had, at one point, it was like a 3-on-1 fight, and I won, so that was pretty cool. And then I moved forward a little bit. I was like, okay, the next mob, let's sneak up here and get them. So I walk forward, and, like, two more come out of the ocean to replace the ones behind me that I just killed, and bam, I'm surrounded.
Oh, that's cool. So they came out of the ocean instead of just appearing.
Yeah, they didn't. Oh, there was no just, like, respawn.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that was something kind of neat I noticed.
Yeah.
And then I ran. A lot. So I never even got close to Tequatl, and that was kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm.
But it's good to know that there's still team required content.
Oh, definitely. That made me very, very happy. This is still an MMO.
Yeah,
and it's a solo-friendly MMO, but it is an MMO, and they haven't forgotten that.
You just can't do everything solo.
Right. And I'm glad for that.
An event isn't... I mean, that wasn't like a story, something required for the storyline, right? It was just an event.
Right. It was just an event.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, you're not forced. You can, and I hate that word anyway, because it's a game. You're not forced to do anything.
Yeah.
But you just, you know, you can skip that. You can skip that content if you want, or you can just kind of wait around and see who else shows up. That was, you know what? That was the cool thing too, is that I needed more people. And if I really wanted to do this, I could have put out like the call, and I could have put out the call in a chat window. And what I loved was that I didn't have to put out the call and say, "Hey, I need 3 guardians and a ranger and a couple of this and one of that." I just needed warm bodies.
Yeah.
And everybody could bring anything they wanted.
Cool.
And that I absolutely love that about the class setup here.
Yeah.
So. Huh. Yeah.
That's cool.
I guess I've lived through too many group setups in Guild Wars 1 where a dervish wanted to come and people told them no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, we need a monk. You can't come. There's no room for you.
Hmm. Yeah. That's cool. So what else? Anything else?
Let's see. Oh my gosh. I just did a lot of running around. I mean, I spent almost all of one demo running around looking at the environments. Mm-hmm. Because I just wanted to see. The environments I've been very, very impressed with in the Silvari Lands, and I don't know, I think you'll know this sound too. This just made me kind of happy. Or in the Asura Lands, there was this constant undertone of cicadas.
Oh, okay, like an ambience?
Yes, and you're hearing that, I mean, they have those in Chattanooga this time of year, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's something that I noticed, and it wasn't like drilling into your ears and driving you insane, mm-hmm. but it was there, and it just, and you know, there were other like frog noises here and there. It sounded like a swamp in hot weather.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it was very well done. And I was just, you know, I mean, I was like running over, there were some old tumble-down walls with some moss growing on them here and there, and the environment, both sound and look, were so well done.
Cool.
That made me happy.
Did you notice anything different from, like, in the UI or the appearance of the game since last time you played it?
The general look was pretty much the same, mm-hmm. and that's not a bad thing, and they shouldn't.
Yeah.
It was good before. They shouldn't revamp it. As far as the UI, I mean, your skill bar had obviously changed because of the elimination of energy.
Oh, right.
Based on your skills. But the basic setup was still the same.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Non-gameplay stuff. Do you want me to talk about the ArenaNet party?
Sure. Yeah.
That was, I mean, there wasn't a ton to tell. There were, I mean, ArenaNet, they're great hosts. Mm-hmm. There were so many people, they invited so many people, they had chartered buses bringing us over. Like multiple chartered buses. So we all loaded up. And I think the way it worked was that they had a limited number of invitations, and it was obviously a large number. But there are 270 people that work at ArenaNet. And because of the fire code, I guess they had to say, okay, fire code says this number of people can be in the building. We want to invite as many fans as possible. We need a lot of devs to come and, you know, play host. So the impression I got was that they said at the beginning, all right, this many employees can come because we don't want to make the fire marshal come and shut the building down, but we still want a ton of fans to be able to come.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very, very crowded evening in a good way. They have a motion capture room with a green screen. And they opened that up for the evening, and they put a photographer in there, a giant pile of silly props, and a printer.
Oh, no.
So you could go in there, and they said, just grab your favorite dev or some of your community friends. Go in there. They had 5 different backgrounds you could choose from, and we'll take your picture and print it out right away.
That's
so
cool.
It was like a giant photo booth, but really, really cool.
So that's where you got that picture taken, right?
That's where I got that picture taken. Elizabeth from Talkteria and I were kind of hanging out, and we
put on
stupid hats.
I like to pronounce it Elixabeth.
Elixabeth.
Because there's an X there. Sorry.
Yeah, she is an X in there. But that
so you guys took a picture?
Yeah, we took our picture together. We just put on stupid hats and got silly. Let's see, they had that. The food was amazing, of course. They had like a buffet catered in. And a banana split bar, which made me so happy. and just everywhere I looked, we were all hanging out in the common area, eating and chatting. And everywhere I looked, people were pulling tables together, and big groups were like sitting together just to hang out. And it was like 50-50 groups hanging around talking, ArenaNet staff and fans. And it was just such a casual, comfortable atmosphere. And I don't know how many studios really do that kind of thing, that have such a face-to-face rapport with their fans at every opportunity. So that was extremely, extremely cool. They had a giveaway, and let's see, what did they give away? Some of the Char plushies. They gave away a Razer... I think 3 sets of a Razer headset and keyboard, or it was a Razer mouse and keyboard. I wouldn't know because I didn't win. and then they gave away a really nice graphics card. Cool. So people won some cool stuff. There was an open bar with just like beer and wine.
So you got totally plastered.
Man, I had like a whole glass of wine. It was crazy. And actually, it was funny. Elizabeth and I were kind of wandering around just looking at stuff. Matt was off playing Rock Band. There was this hilarious sing-along. They were playing Bohemian Rhapsody on Rock Band. And by the time it was over, I think 20, 25 people were singing along. And it was just so much. There was beer involved. Not a ton, but there was enough. And I kind of, Elizabeth and I were walking around, and we ran into Martin, and he was like, can I get you ladies a drink? And I still had like half a glass of wine. I was like, I've got one. And he looks at me, he was like, would you like another? Oh, no, I'm fine, but I guess I was going to two-fist my wine. So there was Rock Band, and people were playing ping pong and foosball, and of course the Usability Lab had a line out the door. People were playing Guild Wars 2. Mm-hmm. I played the ill-fated PvP match, and then I slunk over to my PvE comfort zone and did a demo, and then I got out of the way because so many people were waiting.
Yeah. I think it's cool that they did it at the studio, because usually they'll rent a place like, what's the name of that place? Jillian's.
Jillian's, yeah.
Yeah. It's like an arcade, giant arcade.
Uh-huh.
There's another one, Gameworks, I think, is where they usually have it.
Yeah, I actually went to a party at Gameworks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's where they had it the last few years before, and that was always a lot of fun. Because the first hour of it was just like the VIP, I guess. Like when I first went, I won that fan contest thing. So
yeah,
you just
kind
of hang out and you get to play like, you know, Donkey Kong against, you know, James Finney, and you know, that's how I remember doing stuff like that. So I mean, it's kind of cool that they brought it into the studio. I imagine, now what I'm curious about, because my very first thought about going into the studio is, like, did they like lock all the good stuff away in rooms and have like armed guards?
Yes. Honestly, there were burly guys in black polo shirts, and there were several hallways roped off. And there were, I mean, like burly guys in black polo shirts standing in front of them at parade rest.
Wow.
I am not making that up.
That's crazy.
And I had, I'm trying to think what was there. Down one hall, I know, was like the server room and the community manager's area. And then down another hall was the artist, was like all the artist pods. So those two were blocked off. And I think, I mean, those were like the real work areas.
Yeah.
Everything else was pretty much fair game. I mean, we were upstairs in the usability lab, we were in the game room, we were in the common areas, we were in the kitchen. Aside from those two, granted, large and important areas, everybody pretty much had the run of the building.
See, I imagine that they went, you know, they went over every little detail. Because I've been to studio tours and visits to studios, and sometimes they'll leave stuff on the walls, and they'll be like, oh, do me a favor and don't take pictures of that or report on it. And I'm like, okay, you know, because I, you know, yeah. I'm going to honor that. But I imagine there they made sure they didn't accidentally leave up any, you know, anything that nobody's ever seen before.
Yeah, I think they were probably very, very careful about that. Well, and I told a story about like that about Fan Day. I don't know if you remember. Martin was standing in front of a whiteboard.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
We all took pictures of him. And then somebody was like, Martin, behind you on the whiteboard. And he asked us all to delete our pictures.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So yeah, that, but no, they just had it completely roped off this time. And that's, yeah, I mean, that's okay. That's not why we weren't there to like dig into all their little secrets.
Yeah. Well, you weren't. I'm sure there were people there who were.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. But tough crap. Go have a banana split. So that was, cool. That was pretty much fun. Oh my gosh. I can't think. I only got to go to one of the panels and that was pretty fun. And otherwise, I mean, they gave away, I guess at one panel that I didn't get to go to, some of the chairs had papers taped to the underside. And those people won either a char plushie, some of the people won char plushies, some of the people won the black commando jerseys.
Oh, nice.
They gave away 10
April
of
Fools.
Them.
Yeah.
And I heard, I actually never found one of those winners to confirm this. Somebody told me that the winners of those jerseys, they put their names on the back like the staff has.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope that's true. I never did confirm it. So
yeah.
If that turns out not to be true, I'm not lying. It's just what I heard.
That's cool.
So they gave away 10 of those. And I actually asked at the party, I was like, I have a credit card and a checkbook. How much? Because I will buy one right now.
Yeah.
And I was talking to John Ryan. He said, I don't really know if we're going to have a swag shop.
Oh.
But if they have a swag shop, I will buy one of those. Absolutely.
Yeah. Real life microtransactions.
Real? Fine. Great. Bring it on. I want one of those things.
That's cool.
So it was, and that was, my gosh, I think that was about it.
Well, as far, like you said, that there were panels that you didn't get to see. I mean, there were a few little bits of news that came out during this whole thing, and one of them was the guild thing with multiple guilds per character.
That was
or per
pretty
account.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what that was they said that you're still going to have a guild or an account-wide guild. So when, just like in Guild Wars 1, when you join a guild with your character, all of your characters on that account are join that guild, but you can join multiple guilds with your account. Now, it seems like someone said unlimited, but then there was kind of a lot of people are kind of saying that that's not entirely true, that it's not unlimited, it's just multiple. I think even if they said unlimited, I mean, there's not going to be a trillion guilds, or I don't know, there might be. But I mean, what do you think about this choice to do this? Do you think that this is the perfect way to do it?
I absolutely do. And, yeah, as far as I know, they didn't say unlimited,
yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe they'd limit it to like 10 or something. I don't think people are going to go too insane. Yeah. But here's why I think it's great. Let me pontificate. In Guild Wars 1, and I know I base a lot of things off Guild Wars 1, but I think that's pretty valid.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see problems in Guild Wars 1 that they are fixing in Guild Wars 2, and they're making better. My Guild Wars 1 guild is very, very active, and it's kind of like a big family. We all know each other pretty well. And several times, people have left the guild because they've said, you know what, I want to pursue this title or that title or the other title. This guild is not, and to get those titles without spending the rest of my life on them, I really need to get into a guild that's hardcore oriented toward that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Be it PvP or be it a Luxon farming, faction farming guild, because we're Kurzic. Or be it a, I mean, one guy left to join a guild that was like hardcore dungeon running. Or, no, hardcore DOA running because he needed to get a bunch of tormented weapons. And he couldn't get that in the time that he wanted in our guild. So his only option, his best, I guess not his only option, I mean, he could have stayed and just run with them, but the best option was for him to leave us and join this DOA-focused guild for a few months.
Yeah, I think that that is a very flawed system, you know, the way that Guild Wars 1 does it. I can see on one hand the dedication. You know, you want people to be dedicated. But on the other hand, it's, you know, I've actually bought, well, I have multiple accounts. Some of them were given to me, not by ArenaNet, but by friends. And so I have multiple accounts, and I join different guilds with each account because that's the only way that I can play with this group of friends or this group of friends. And you know, I have a good example is I have some really great friends who they all work together, so they're all, you know, together. And there's maybe, you know, six of them, seven of them, and they play together. And they don't want to go joining another group because they, you know, they always have had a guild together in every game they play. So I joined them on another account, and then I have this other group of friends. It's kind of the same way. Some of them work together, some of them are related, and they have their little guild, and I want to play with them. You know, so I want to join their guild. I want to see what's going on in their guild chat and things like that.
Exactly.
So I have to make another account, and to check those guilds, I have to log out and log back into different. But I mean, I guess the only thing that's kind of similar there is that guild chat, they've said, will be limited to one, so you won't be able to have like a bunch of tabs open for all the different guild chats, right?
Is it limited to one or is it limited to only one at a time?
At a time, I think.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you could flip back and forth here and there. I'd actually like to see a lot of tabs. Just because I don't like to miss anything.
Because it's like it reminds you of work, right?
I need my tabs. And you know they'll have to be in order. God forbid they get out of order. I don't know. I'm very interested in the mechanics of this. And I honestly have not had time to study it as much as I want to. I've started reading up because I want to talk about it in Monday's Flameseeker Chronicles. But I like this because I've played for years now in a game that does not have this, and I've seen all the disadvantages.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it's nobody really thinks it's a bad decision. I think a lot of people are looking forward to it, so.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It's a very, very good mechanic. I want to know more.
So cool. Yeah, I think the only other thing was there was a little bit of, I don't know, I guess rumor kind of floating around about these player-run PvP servers. What happened was there was an interview over at MMORPG.com, and I'm not sure exactly all the details here. I don't want to say anything wrong, but they essentially, I guess they overheard something, or they misinterpreted maybe what a dev said, and they reported that there were going to be player-run PvP servers, and they didn't know if there were going to be PvE servers as well. Well, I guess you know we ran with that, and we kind of said this is what MMORPG.com is saying, and then it's funny because then a lot of people got on massively and said, you know, you guys are spreading this rumor around, and we're like, well, we're just reporting. But what it is they actually came back and confirmed it. ArenaNet did, and they said that it's the PvP server part of this is still up in the air, but there won't be PvE servers like this, right?
Right. Yeah. The actual quote from Martin Kirstein is, in the interview, he mentioned that we are considering allowing players to create their own PvP servers. And create is in quotes, so take that for whatever. He said, it is not for certain. And we never mentioned anything about private PvE server. That is something we definitely will not do.
And the definition of a player-run server is what, you know, people are kind of running into a wall here because they're like, wait a minute, does this mean that we can host like, you know, like people run their own servers for like Call of Duty and things like that, and they'll be able to put their own rules on it and their own, you know, whatever they want to do. Does that mean, does it mean it's like that, or does it mean that you will have like a set, like a checklist of things that you can set up, like I want this kind of PvP and this kind of PvP, and then you can run it like that. which is similar to games. Some other games will do that. I don't know. I mean, that's something we don't know. I imagine it won't have the freedom to run whatever you want on it. You know, it's still their IP, and it's still their property. They want to make sure that you're not, you know, running mods or cheats or anything like that. You know, that it's still a representation of them, so they don't want you to do that. So I imagine it'll probably, like Terra actually, if I can speak of another game, Terra has a thing that's similar when you take over cities and you become the mayor of the city, you can set the rules for everything that happens in your city. You can set open PvP, you can set the prices on the merchants, all this stuff. So I think it's probably something like that. It's like a checklist of what, and again, this is me speculating, it's not confirmed, but I imagine it'll be something like that, like a checklist of things that you can open or close, you know, different rules of PvP. What do you think?
That makes sense. Yeah. I'm so hesitant on this just because they're still considering it and so on and so forth, but that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, again, it's not confirmed. Nobody told me anything. I'm just completely going off of, you know, what Terra does and what I've seen in some other games. So it's just something, especially if it's going to be a competitive sport. It's like they're introducing the rules, or they could introduce the rules of games like Call of Duty, which already do things like that, you know. And they let you run your own server. Mm-hmm. I think that's it would be pretty cool. I think it would work well with a competitive PvP market.
Also. Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, I think that's probably about it. We're about at our time here, but I want to thank you all for listening, and again, hopefully we will have something special for next episode, just because it's, you know, episode 50, and it's kind of a milestone. So we will be hopefully doing something with that, and if you want to email us, and we didn't read any emails, we're completely backlogged with emails, and we apologize, but if you want to write us an email, you know, we'll start getting to those again regularly. You can email Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at guildcast.com, or Ruby, R-U-B-I, at guildcast.com. Check out our Twitter and Facebooks, and our main page at guildcast.com, where you'll find, you know, all the information, links and things that we talked about in today's show. So, I guess that's it.
That is it.
So, until next time, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And we'll talk to you then.
Oh, he's so cute.